Closing out that set from the late, great Muddy Fraser, we had Honey Let Me In. The Vancouver bluesman passed away 11 years ago Tuesday, May 2, 2012 at 62. Born Robert Scrivens in Ottawa in 1949, Muddy started playing guitar at 11. At 20, he was playing in the Take It Easy Blues Band, touring Canada and the U.S.'s coffee house and college circuit. He moved to Vancouver in 1975 and was playing in the legendary Yale Hotel's house band with Jack Lavin from 1986 until his passing, and played with the likes of Pinetop Perkins, Taj Mahal, Guitar Shorty, and A.C. Reed. The Muddy Fraser Band released their debut album in 1983 and followed that up with their sophomore release 2 years later. Before that, from her soon-to-be-released Dirt Woman Blues, we had Ireland's Grainier Duffy with Rise Above, and I got that set started off with birthday boy Chris Antonick and Pilgrim from his 2022 release, Morning Star. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Starting off this set, the second part of my three-part interview with Savoy Brown's Pat DeSalvo and Garnet Grimm.
One of the things I like about this album is it's kind of bookended. It opens up with like a 43-second song called Falling Through, but then at the end, you get the full song, Falling Through the Cracks, and you guys aren't on. It's just Kim playing this grungy Delta-style guitar. What did you guys think when you heard those songs?
Well, I asked him what he wanted me to play on it. He said nothing. and at first, I was like, oh, that's weird. Okay. Because he always had a blueprint. When you think about it, he started the band and he ended the band. And I think that's what he was doing when he was bookending that song. It was like, you know, he was in his bedroom practicing when he was younger and then put his band together. So it was just him in the beginning. Then he had the band. And then really at the end, I mean, I wasn't up with Garnett and Kim at all for quite a while because I was out of the area. So I think he just in his mind put this together. I started this, I'm ending this. And I think it was great the way he did it, to be honest with you.
But all the music in the middle, too, you get a pretty good range of blues styles in there.
That was on purpose, too, I think. You know, we didn't talk to him about, because we weren't together at all. So we really didn't get to really talk to him. And then when I did talk to him, you know, the conversations were all over the place over the last year. You know, we weren't going to tour. We knew that was coming up. And I remember he felt really bad because we had really developed Europe and we were starting to do great there. But, you know, we knew what was happening. Just hard to face the facts sometimes of really what the reality is. You know,
yeah,
that was weird.
I asked Kim about this in 2019. I'll tell you what he said. But you guys are like the longest serving members of Savoy Brown. And it's, well, they've been around since 1965. So it's like 58 years. What did you guys think when, like, first of all, did you guys know each other ahead of time? Or did you guys meet when Kim brought you together?
I was going to make a joke. I go, yeah, I finally found the key and I unlocked me in Garnett. I met Kim in 88. And he came out. I was playing a club and he came out. And I met him then. And we struck up a conversation, and occasionally I would talk to him. And then the relationship started growing a little bit, where we would talk a little bit more. This went on for years. And then me and Garnett did Blues Like Midnight, the acoustic record with him. And then we did some other stuff, and me and Garnett had been playing on and off in different projects. So there was a couple of things going on here, Brent. One is he loved our work ethic, and there was no drama with me and Garnett, especially Garnett. With me sometimes there would be, you know, there could be some issues. Remember, real quick, I was telling someone this about today. We were in Czechoslovakia, and I was going out for a night on the town with the promoter, and I wanted to try absinthe, whatever it is. And Kim was freaking out, and he had Garnett go with me in case, you know, but I never wound up really doing it anyway. Remember that?
Yes.
We saw that real weird band, the Plastic People of the Universe.
Yes, they're legendary in that area.
Yeah. So weird.
Generic alternative presents its super cool and sophisticated listeners and indie-packed alternative rock with a splash of electronic dancing music. As an added bonus, some generically alternative facts and far-reaching tidbit information will delight your eardrums. Tune in Mondays at 2 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
But it was a work ethic that both of us had, and it was a respect thing. We really helped Kim in a lot of other ways where we didn't need a tour manager. We really didn't need anybody. We went on the road. It was basically the three of us, and that was it. But Debbie would come out occasionally, and that was good when Debbie would come out.
That's his wife that also had played a role in the album, eh?
Right.
Yeah.
Debbie would often come out, and we really appreciated it because she sold so much more merch than we could without her. So, yeah, she was great.
You guys toured with Kim for a little while, and then I think Voodoo Moon was your first studio album with him?
2010, maybe, around that time.
Yeah, I was going to say 2009, somewhere around there.
We got in there in the fall 2009, and then we added a singer, and we did Voodoo Moon, and then we did Songs from the Road, which was on Roof Records. It was a DVD. You know, we had a modest crowd that night, and over the last bunch of years, you could barely get into it. It was a pretty good-sized venue.
For me, Pat was very instrumental in helping me get into the band. We were all friends leading up to that time period anyways. But yeah, Pat and I, it's a very good, very honored to be part of that. We were the longest running rhythm section because I know there's been a lot of people in and out of the band, a lot of great people.
I'll just read you what Kim said when I asked him about it, because I thought it was pretty funny. I had to go look it up. Because I asked him, I said, like, what is your staying power with him? And he said, I think Pat and Garnett are a particular kind of people that are supportive in a different way than musicians have been in the past. Certainly I'm not easy to get along with, and that's one thing that they've managed to understand me. So that's good, and I think there was a point when Garnett said he can't do this, he can't put up with me, he can't do this, and so I sort of modified my behavior with them. So the three of us were able to find very, very nice, comfortable personal relationship together. And then we always had the chemistry as musicians. So we've got it all, and I think it took a while to realize about that. I've had some really good lineups and some really good bands, but sometimes you just don't have the chemistry.
Yeah.
Well, I would agree. I think that was really the staying power, was the fact that we all kind of understood each other. We were mature enough. It does help when you're not 25, 24, trying to do this. We understood each other, and Pat and I understood the boundaries, and we just knew how to handle it. And, you know, Pat's correct. It was bare bones when, I mean, about 14 years that Pat and I were with Kim. We never really had a tour manager. Debbie would advance the shows. Pat was great managing people on the road. I was the equipment guy, and I would help Kim out with the
stuff. You did a lot, Garnett. You did a lot.
And, yeah, I mean, it was just everybody worked, you know, and we all took part in the driving, and we were all carrying guitars at some point. And so it was just a group effort, and I do think Kim's right. You know, a lot of times musicians can be, I know this is shocking to some people, but musicians can be a little self-absorbed, you know, and...
Say the least. You know, that's all we're doing is making noise, I say, and people like the noise we're making. If they do, that's great, you know? Yeah,
I guess the good thing is none of you guys are brothers, so that's always a good helping part, I think.
Right.
Man, the three of us, we would drive sometimes 10 hours, right?
Wow.
And we'd have no radio on. This was a lot, driving around a lot. And we would just talk. Mm-hmm. And occasionally we'd look at some sports scores, but... Yeah, it was really, I know we repeated some of our stories, but we never would say anything to the other. But it was really kind of weird. I've been in tons of bands playing out since I was 15 years old. And Garnett started at a young age, too. And this was just a good vibe. You know, it was really good. It was a great run for me and Garnett, I would say. And we were very lucky to be able to play with someone of Kim's stature. I just wish he would have gotten more response over the years. I think that was on him, though. He really kept a low profile. He wasn't big on schmoozing. He just wanted to make music and make the fans happy. He was really concerned about putting together a good show for the fans. That's what he was about, you know, just go on stage and just do a great job. That was it. We're just like a big blues bar band, basically. There isn't a lot of production needed for this group, you know, minimal lighting. Once you set everything, just leave it alone, I would tell the sound guys. Don't try to produce a record tonight. Once you get the sound, and we were really, really easy to work with most of the time. Somebody wasn't sometimes. But, you know, sometimes you just got to work with everybody, and just once you get your sound, okay, we're all set, man. That's it. You know, let's just play.
Stay. Be nice to me. Don't go away.
Closing out that set from their new release, Blues All Around, featuring the late, great Kim Simmons, we had Savoy Brown with Hurting Spell. And I got that set started off with the second part of my three-part interview with Savoy Brown's Pat DeSalvo and Garnet Grimm. I'll have the last part later in the show. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Starting off this set from his new release, Golden Thread, this is Ontario's Jerome Godbout with Blues Ranger.
Gilgamesh, who lands all dark and gray. Archangel Michael,
Closing out that set from BC's Sabrina Weeks and Mike Hilliard, featuring Sherman Tank Doucette on harmonica, we had their new version of Mr. Regret. And I got that set started off with Ontario's Jerome Godbout and Blues Ranger from his new release, Golden Thread. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Taking us across the top of our first hour, Milwaukee-born bluesman Michael Burks passed away suddenly 11 years ago Saturday, May 6, 2012, while returning from a tour of Europe. Michael collapsed in the Atlanta International Airport and later died of a heart attack. He was just 54. Born into a blues family, Michael began playing guitar before the age of 5. He was signed by Alligator Records after the release of his 1999 self-produced debut, From the Inside Out. Michael Burks was nominated for 13 Blues Music Awards, winning twice, won the Living Blues Magazine Critics Award for Best Guitarist in 2004, and was nominated for the B.B. King International Artist of the Year at the 2012 Maple Blues Awards. From his second Alligator release, 2008's Iron Man, this is the late, great Michael Burks with the opening track, Love Disease.